Joining me is Adam Butler, Chief Investment Officer at Resolve Asset Management Global. And today we're taking a look at carry strategies, how they work, and how to return stack carry strategies using newly innovated return stack ETFs sponsored by Resolve Asset Management and Newfound Research. Adam, great to have you on.
Always great to chat, Pierre. Thanks for having me on.
Adam, first of all, since we're on the subject of carry, what is carry and how would you describe what are commonly known as carry trades or carry strategies?
Right, yeah. So I think there's kind of a technical definition of what carry is, and then there's the kind of colloquial definition. I think people people have heard of carry in the financial industry maybe associate carry with a strategy that was fairly common in the early 2000s, the carry trade, which typically was constructed by borrowing in funding currencies with low interest rates, like the yen and in for a long time the U.S. dollar, to invest in currencies with higher local interest rates, which often are emerging market currencies, think the Brazilian real or the Mexican peso or what have you. Though it can also be in developed market currencies. It's just typically that the spreads are a little bit lower. But the idea is that let's say you're borrowing at 2% to invest in a currency that, where the cash rates are 4%, and you're going to earn that 2% return as long as the price of the currency doesn't change against you, right?
Right.
And so during pro-cyclical periods, which is kind of 80% of the time when markets are, risk-seeking, investors are deploying their capital, hoping for a return on investment, then those carry trades tend to be highly profitable. And historically, in the currency carry trade, kind of 10 to 20% of the time, when investors are more concerned with return of capital during risk-off periods, they tended to go against them. So the currency carry trade was often associated with having these fat negative tails, where most of the time you're doing really well, and then some of the time you give back a lot of the returns that you earned while you were doing well. And so, that's just one kind of narrow expression of a broader concept of carry. We like to think that carry, as a technical definition, is just the return that an investor expects to get on an investment if the price of that investment doesn't change, right? So if you buy an apartment building, you're going to rent out the apartments in that building. You're going to borrow from the bank in order to buy that apartment building, and you're going to collect rents. Presumably, the total sum of the rents is going to be higher than the interest that you need to pay the bank or the cost of capital on that investment. That difference is the carry on that apartment building. In a stock portfolio, the carry is the dividend yields that are paid out by the companies. So even if the value of the stocks in the portfolio don't go up, then you're still earning this constant income from the dividends that are getting paid. This is perhaps most familiar for bond investors. Obviously you invest in a bond. Well, you can borrow cash to invest in bonds. Typically, bonds have a higher yield than cash, either because they've got credit risk or because you're looking to lend money for a longer horizon. Like cash, you can get your money back right away. You know exactly what the value is going to be. But if you lend your money for 10 years, interest rates may change in the meantime, inflation may change in the meantime. And so typically you need to be compensated with a higher yield to lend money for 10 years than you would just to lend money overnight in the cash markets, right? So that is also a carry trade. And then there's also a carry investing in commodity futures. And it's a little more nuanced. That requires a little bit more explanation. But the idea here with the carry trade or carry strategy that we're big fans of is that we're not just investing in currencies and absorbing that kind of, pro-cyclical risk. Rather, they're investing in a wide variety of different asset classes. And because those asset classes tend to have their best and worst returns in very different economic environments, they tend to balance each other out. And while it's far from a risk-free strategy, you do get an enormous amount of benefit from that cross-asset diversification. So you're picking up dividends, coupons, and convenience yield from commodities, and this positive carry yield differential from currencies, all in one broad portfolio. And they just, you know, you never have, you're never all jumping on one section of the trampoline. Rather, you're, you know, jumping at different times on different sections of the trampoline, and it's a much more comfortable ride.
The carry is any surplus resulting from having borrowed to invest, and the investments produce a surplus return on top of the cost of borrowing.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, in order for markets to entice you to come out of cash, where you know the value of that cash is going to be tomorrow, you can use it for consumption today. In order for the markets to entice you to invest your money in something risky where you don't know what the value is going to be tomorrow, where there is some price risk if you try to redeem before maturity, then typically the markets need to pay you a higher expected return, right? Stocks pay you dividends, bonds pay you a coupon in excess of the cash rate. Higher risk currencies or currencies are experiencing higher inflation or higher inflation risk will often have a higher interest rate, right? So investors need to be compensated for putting their money in those different areas, and that compensation is carry.
Right. And you're talking, and the broader concept of carry, you're talking about having a systematically run, diversified portfolio of carry assets from across the universe of investments, from across the universe of assets.
And, yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah. And so the outcome is the overall outcome, not of any single holding, but of the entire diversified pool.
That's right, exactly. So all we're, the primary bet that we're making is that on average, investors would prefer to put their money in higher yielding equity markets than lower yielding equity markets, higher yielding bonds than lower yielding bonds on a risk adjusted basis, right? I mean, obviously, if a market is perceived to be much higher risk, then it needs to pay a higher return, and the risk adjusted expected return might be the same as a lower yielding market that has lower risk, right? So really what we're trying to do is emphasize markets that are getting paid more or that are paying investors more for the same level of risk, and de-emphasizing markets that are paying investors less for the same level of risk. And importantly, sometimes markets actually are paying or are giving negative expected returns. So you can imagine from 2022 until some point in 2024, we had an inverted yield curve. So investors were actually willing to lend money for 10 years at lower rates than where the Fed was holding cash rates, right? So in that case, you're able to get better returns on cash. You're actually better to borrow at the 10-year rate and invest in cash. And so sometimes you want to be actually short bonds. Sometimes the dividend yield on equity markets are way below the dividend yield on 10-year treasuries or even on cash. And so you want to be short equities and long cash or long treasury bonds. And sometimes commodities have inverted curves as well, which means that you get paid for being short instead of being long, right? So this is a long short portfolio that really is just trying to position into markets to maximize the absolute level of risk adjusted carry, whether that carry is long or short.
So in a nutshell, an absolute return strategy.
Well, let's call it an uncorrelated strategy because, you know, sometimes people perceive absolute return as being very, very low risk. You know, like you kind of expect that the portfolio is just going to go up almost every month, right?
Yeah.
Carry strategies, you can set them to any sort of risk target you want. The diversification does an enormous amount of work in order to manage that level of risk. But, you know, you still definitely get a ride, right? As you for markets to settle into and or find equilibrium, moving towards markets that pay higher risk-adjusted carry. But markets move in the short term for a variety of different reasons, and investors are not always only concerned with seeking the highest, carry differential. Sometimes they're fleeing risk. Sometimes they're in high speculation mode, and they don't really care about what the yield is because they think there's going to be a buyer or buyers who come in soon after and continue to push prices even further away from equilibrium. There's a variety of different reasons that markets can dislocate from the direction that you'd expect if carry was the only thing that investors cared about all the time.
Right.
But they don't, and therefore you absolutely do get these fluctuations.
Right. So an uncorrelated total return strategy.
Yeah.
Right. So what are the diversification benefits of adding carry strategies to a traditional equity bond portfolio? What's in it for investors?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, in a way, investing in corporate bonds is a carry strategy. Investing in high yield bonds is a carry strategy. Investing in duration is a carry strategy. Investing in dividend stocks is a carry strategy. But they end up being these highly concentrated portfolio bets, right? So what we try to do is we say, well, we're going to use futures markets to invest in the global equity indices with the highest risk-adjusted yields, the global government bond markets with the highest risk-adjusted yields, the global currencies with the highest risk-adjusted yields, and the global commodities with the highest risk-adjusted yields, in the direction that they are currently paying those yields. And as a result, because we're, sometimes we're long and short different equity indices, long and short different government bond indices, long and short different currencies, and long and short different commodities, it ends up having a diversified global carry strategy ends up having a very uncorrelated return stream relative to traditional allocations to equities or bonds that most investors would have in the portfolio.
How accessible have carry strategies been for retail investors?
Well, the currency carry strategy was traditionally, an institutional only strategy, right? Invested in by pension funds, by hedge funds. Eventually, many institutions brought that in-house. They made them a little bit more sophisticated. So to this day, many institutions do run large currency carry books. Many institutions, though probably a much smaller number, run diversified carry strategies, but it has traditionally been very difficult for, retail investors or smaller investors to get access to the global carry style strategy that we offer in the ReturnStack family. But they could get some exposure to it by investing in managed futures funds or managed futures indices. Typically, managed futures are known for their deploying trend following strategies. And it's still true to this day that the vast majority of the returns to managed futures are explained by trend following. But what we've observed in our own research, and there's been other studies that confirm this, is that over time, many managed futures strategies have also begun to add in carry signals into their trend following strategies, because carry is a really nice natural diversifier to trend. Trend typically tends to chase into the extremes of trends, and often at the extremes of trends, the carry gets quite negative. The market gets quite extended away from the natural kind of economic equilibrium. And so adding some carry to a trend strategy can do a nice job of balancing out the most extreme elements of trend. And in fact, if you look over the very long term, a diversified carry strategy and diversified trend strategy end up having a relatively low correlation in the neighborhood of kind of 0.3, 0.4. So they're just really nice complements for one another.
You made an interesting point. I mean, I think the interesting point was that unwittingly investors have been implementing carry strategies without realizing that that's what they were doing. And what you're offering is something a little more deliberate.
Yeah.
What you're offering is something deliberate, where you're deliberately seeking the benefits of carry, but in a much broader, diversified way, rather than a directional bet of any kind that could actually potentially go sideways on you.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, if you just as an example, if you are an American investor or a Canadian investor and you invest in European stocks, And the euro cash rates are substantially lower than Canadian cash rates. Well, you implicitly are expecting a negative carry on the currency even while you're investing in your European equities. That's often an unintended bet, right? Right. If you own a carry strategy, then almost definitionally, there are some risk elements involved. But all things equal, that carry strategy would do some of the work in hedging the negative passive carry that investor would have in owning those foreign stocks under that condition, because the carry strategy would naturally be short the euro and long the Canadian dollar, for example, the example that I gave, right? So, you know, it does sort of make explicit all of the bets in the portfolio and make sure that you are properly positioned to harvest carry in the right direction at the right time.
Yeah. So you're kind of by doing things more deliberately and getting involved in a more deliberate systematic carry strategy, you're reducing the chances that you're unwittingly employing a carry strategy that's negative in your portfolio. I mean, we do these things unwittingly, but we do them in the name of diversification. But the problem is that, you know, it might actually lead to over-diversification in a negative way because of the unintended consequences. Whereas if you're more deliberate and more systematic in the approach and therefore more objective in the approach, you're actually reducing the chance that you'll be exposed to an unintended consequence of, let's say, negative carry, simply because you might not have understood that the currency risk might turn against you, even if the investment itself is doing rather well. We've seen countless examples of that. So it's a more deliberate approach. It's a more defined approach. It reminds me of the luck skill debate, and you know, it's in therefore, you know, you're tilting more in the direction of skill rather than simply trying to get lucky, making diversified bets in offshore climbs.
You're making explicit many bets that were implicit, and you're managing them directly rather than unmanaging them. I think a really, you know, an easy example is, think back to 2022, obviously 2022, 2023, much of 2024, a really rough ride for bond investors, because even for corporate bond investors, think about the Bloomberg Barclay aggregate index, of the corporate bond index, right? Well, that has a duration of about 8-9 years. And so you're getting compensated for both a positively sloped interest rate curve and for the credit risk that you're accepting for investing in corporate bonds, right? Well, that's nice most of the time, because most of the time the interest rate curve is positive and the credit curve, the credit yield is positive, right? But for 22, 23 and much of 2024, the interest rate curve was negative, right? So if you own a basket of corporate bonds, then if you also own a carry strategy, what you have is in the bond portfolio, you're long credit risk and you're long duration. In the carry strategy, you're short duration, right?
Right.
Why? Because you've actually got a negatively sloping interest rate curve, and so you've got negative carry on this duration bet, right? So in that way, you're sort of partially offsetting much of this negative carry exposure that you have in your normal portfolio by investing in this diversified carry strategy, because it's just reducing the negative carry on the duration element of your corporate bond portfolio.
Adam, it strikes me that, you know, it's, you know, in sort of doing my own background research, it strikes me as funny that, you know, you can go online and you can find out all about carry strategies, what they are, what examples there are out there of how to do it. But the end result to me turned out the same, which was that, okay, once I've decided I want to do something like carry, or I want to implement carry in my portfolio as a diversifier, the next question is, how do I do it? Do I do this on my own, or do I go out and find a manager? And of course, the conclusion of that question is find a manager. But when you do, it's actually very difficult because, you know, on a retail basis, it struck me also that carry strategies are not or have not been readily available to investors until you have brought this ETF where, you know, you've got the carry strategy wrapped in your ETFs, either the RSSY or the RSBY, that investors can readily access for their portfolio. So, are there readily available carry strategies out there other than the ones that have always been available to either ultra high net worth investors or institutions?
Yeah. So, I mean, there's obviously hedge funds that offer carry strategies. You can get a carry strategy if you're an institution, you want to sign an ISDA with a bank and get access to the QIS strategies. Other than that, you're kind of out of luck. I've been surprised actually.
And you have to be accredited. You have to fit the bill, right? I mean, in order to get into these programs and these strategies, the hedge funds, you have to be an accredited investor. But in the case of what you've brought to market in RSSY and RSBY, you don't have to do that. You don't have to jump those
hedge fund strategies. You know, like the trend, managed futures trend, same thing. Historically, a 2-in-20 strategy. The managed futures carry, historically a 2-in-20 hedge fund strategy. And, you know, carry is an order of magnitude more complicated from a data management architecture standpoint. You've got to get, it's not just prices, right? For trend following, all you need is futures, continuous futures prices. For carry, you need to have the forward points curve for currencies. You've got to have the cash curves for a variety of different global government bond interest rate markets. You've got to have the, you know, all the liquid contracts all through the back end of the curve for all the commodity contracts. So like there's just, it's a much more data heavy architecture than, you know, most strategies. And that might explain why it's not quite as popular. This takes a lot more work to build and deploy and then generate daily signals for a carry strategy than it does for most other strategies. So we had already done the work many years ago for our hedge fund strategies, and we just took a component of that and made it available at non-hedge fund fees to any retail investor or advisor to add to their portfolio. So we feel pretty good about that.
Yeah, I mean, that strikes me as a significant feature of RSSY and RSBY is the fact that you can not only access the systematic carry strategy that you have developed, but you can do it in the ETF wrapper with no hurdles.
Yeah.
So we've talked about the traditional ways and, you know, even the unwitting ways that investors implement carry in their portfolios that can lead to unintended consequences. The traditional way of diversification, obviously, has been to sell some of your equities, sell some of your bonds, and reallocate into other assets, alternatives, other, you know, uncorrelated bets in your portfolio, and that comes at the risk of being wrong on the diversification itself, right? That's the old dilemma that investors have, which is that, you know, a year or two into a diversified bet, the investor comes back to the advisor and says, you know, why did we do this? Equities and bonds have been performing, and this diversifier didn't deliver. But, you know, on the other side of crisis is the opposite reaction, is why didn't we have more diversifiers? And so the problem that investors have had, at least for the last 10 to 15 years, is that diversification didn't work. And so that's the traditional way that investors have diversified. How does return stacking work, and what key diversification dilemmas does it resolve?
Yeah, so a big challenge over the last 10 or 15 years is that global equity markets, for example, have kind of gone straight up. There have been a few blips over that period, but for the vast majority of the time, it's been just a really great, nice tailwind for global equities. And so investors year in, year out, often experience this regret. So while the advisor understands that it's prudent to spread the investor's capital across a variety of different prospective sources of return where they're not all expected to earn the returns at the same time for the same reasons. That's why you diversify. But the investor is left feeling every year, well, I didn't quite do as well as my friends who maintained their concentrated position in their in the global equity markets. So there's this regret that builds up over time, right? And so any attempt to kind of sell down your equities in order to make room for a diversifier ends up being egg on the advisor's face. So what return stacking acknowledges is that investors typically don't want to sell down their beloved equity and bond allocations. When they go to dinner parties, they don't want to feel like they're underperforming their neighbors or their friends or their family, right? So we don't want to force them to reduce the things that they know and love in order to take the healthy medicine of diversification. So return stacking builds portfolios that give you back the full exposure to the underlying equity or bond index that you that clients want to keep, right, and stack a completely diversified strategy on top, right? So stack a managed futures trend following strategy, stack a managed futures carry strategy, stack a merger arbitrage strategy, soon stack gold and Bitcoin, for example. Just things that move to a different drummer for different reasons at different times, stack it on top so that the client doesn't need to give up the returns and the experience that they want, capturing that the growth of their core assets, but they do get the advantage of the diversification during those inevitable periods, which historically have often lasted many years, you know, often right, a decade or more at a time, where equities have underperformed cash with a very painful ride along the way. Well, then they're very happy to have this added exposure on top that in many cases historically has gone on to do just exceedingly well precisely during those periods when the core markets struggle.
Adam, the return stacking solution is now available in the ETFs you launched last year under ETF tickers RSSY, which is the Return Stack U.S. Stocks and Futures Yield, and RSBY, the Return Stack Bonds and Futures Yield. So investors have a choice between reallocating some of their equity allocation to RSSY or some of their bond allocation to RSBY. How does it work? How would you use RSSY or RSBY to stack or add carry on top of your pre-existing traditional equity bond portfolios?
Right. So RSSY stacks a carry, diversified global carry strategy on top of a portfolio of U.S. equities. RSBY stacks the same diversified carry strategy on top of a portfolio of benchmark bonds. So, you know, an advisor guiding a client might advise the client, well, we can sell down some of your U.S. equity exposure and or some of your bond exposure. We can replace it with RSSY for equity exposure, RSBY for bond exposure. You get back exactly the same right, stock or bond exposure that you sold. So you're not giving that up. But as a bonus, you're getting an allocation to, you know, this extremely well-known, highly prospective alternative strategy with near zero long-term average correlation to stocks and bonds stacked on top. Now, look, this will not work all the time. In fact, you know, the last year has been a particularly challenging time for many alternative strategies, and carry is no exception. At the moment, investors are making decisions that are not really guided by their short-term economic self-interest, but rather are guided by other motivations, either right, geopolitics or what have you. And what that means is that in some cases, the markets have become quite dislocated from their economic equilibrium. And we like to think of that as potential energy in the portfolio, right? Like the investors in the carry strategy over the last year have spent a lot of energy rolling the boulder up the hill, right? And at some point, then the conditions will change and that boulder will roll back down the hill. Historically, we see that after periods of like, you know, a year or two of struggle, that the carriage strategies do go on to produce some of their best returns over the near term, right? So, you know, it could be quite a prospective time to start allocating to carry strategies.
Right.
It may not look as attractive over the last year or so if you look at the chart, but that's, you know, carry is one of these strategies that can build this potential energy. It's just like a value portfolio. When it goes down, the companies in it just get cheaper and more attractive, right? Well, carry has this same kind of quality to it. And in many ways, the carry portfolio of today is more attractive with potentially higher expected returns over the next year or two because of it than, you know, when we launched a year or so ago. So just something for investors to think about.
Yeah. And behaviorally, Adam, there is a benefit of having the pair of equities or bonds with carry integrated as the way you have it in your return stacked ETFs, where you still have, like, for example, you have the RSSY, which is your US stocks and futures yield, US stocks and carry ETF. And so US stocks have done relatively strongly. They've done really, really well. Carry has, because it's a diversifier, has struggled against that climate. But so if your return on your equity portion would have been 20% on a standalone basis, and your return on your carry would have been, let's say, -3 or -4, the net return on the RSSY or something like it would be 16%. So the line item risk, right? There's the line item risk consideration, which is that on a standalone basis, the carry doesn't look so good when it's struggling, when it's having a period of underperformance, as you described. But when you can't see it on a standalone basis, you're less likely to ditch it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the greatest benefits of the return stacked suite, is that the diversification is kind of cloaked by the underlying exposure to the core asset class, right? And stocks or bonds. And so it's harder for investors to kind of agitate or get grumpy, because if the core asset class has had a nice rise, in all likelihood, the carry plus that asset class portfolio has also experienced a rise. And even if the carry has had a negative return, it's just kind of attenuated that positive return on the underlying core allocation, rather than looking like a line item on the portfolio with a negative return. And from an emotional standpoint, that could be a world of difference in conversations with clients and their motivation, incentive, and sustainability and sticking with it.
This way you get to keep your traditional assets intact and stack the carry, the managed futures, the trend, all the different strategies that you're offering through return stack ETFs on top of the core traditional portfolio. I made up a hypothetical example in, you know, what I said previously, but what kind of incremental return can investors expect by allocating some of their assets to carry?
We can judge that by historical simulations, which have been very strong. But in general, I think it's healthy from an expectation standpoint for investors to kind of think about these diversifiers as having the same approximate long-term expected return per unit of risk as equities or bonds or other types of risk premia or strategies that they might think about allocating to, right? So the long-term risk-adjusted return for global equities is in the neighborhood of 0.35 to 0.4. It's about the same for bonds. You know, I think we could probably say the same thing for, you know, a managed futures trend or a managed futures carry or a merger arbitrage strategy, which are some of the other strategies that we are stacking. But so we run the carry strategy at about a 10% volatility. So right. we might expect a 3 to 5% excess return over the long term from an allocation to carry, just as we would expect similar returns at that same volatility for an allocation, a stack to trend or a stack to merger arbitrage, that sort of thing.
I think on the outside, it might not seem that exciting to get 3 to 5% of incremental return. But if you did that on top of your core portfolio and all things being equal, you added another 10 or 20% of your assets into these alternatives, managed futures or trend or carry, and you added an incremental portion on top of so that you had 60, 40, 20, and the 20 was in carry, or the 10, if it was an additional 10% in carry, then your incremental return would be 10% of the total expected return on the carry strategy.
Yeah, so that actually 0.3 to 0.5% a year on average long term,
right.
at a 10% allocation. Yeah, absolutely. And
over time, we know that over the long term, that compounds to a lot more. I mean, the compounding of that is very effective in terms of, you know, trying to, as opposed to trying to beat the market with, you know, by leveraging further into the market, into equities, let's say.
That's right. If you look, the track record on stock picking is not very good, right? If you look at the SPIVA annual reports, typically somewhere between 70 and 95% of active managers underperform. And the managers that have outperformed over the past 1, 3, 5, and 10 years actually typically go on to underperform over the next 3 to 5 years. So it was just very difficult to find active managers like that are stock pickers or bond pickers that have a high likelihood of outperforming. So, you know, these are just uncorrelated strategies that are, you know, in the macro space, they're not nearly as picked over. You know, I like to say 99% of all cognitive and computational resources in markets go towards choosing the best stocks or choosing the best bonds. And there's almost no effort or resources allocated to, you know, how much WTI crude oil should I own relative to Brent crude oil or German bonds or U.S. equities or the U.S. equities versus the Nikkei. You know, so this is just not nearly as picked over. You know, there used to be a rule called Samuelson's Law that says that the market is micro efficient but macro inefficient. Micro being, you know, picking stocks within the stock market. Macro being picking which stock market, which bond market to own, or whether, you know, how much to own in stocks or bonds or commodities or gold or currencies, et cetera, right? So we believe that this is a much less efficient space to seek these excess returns in. Like, the returns are likely to be stronger over time for each unit of risk and more sustainable, just because there are regulatory and institutional frictions to the deployment of a massive amount of capital there. So we think it's a really good opportunity for retail investors. It has very low average long-term correlation to the types of things that retail investors typically invest in. And it's just not offered anywhere else to retail investors in this form. And the structure of being able to get access to this diversification without having to give up the core stock and bond exposure that people have grown to really love, I think is the gift that keeps on giving.
I think what you guys are doing at Return Stacked ETFs is extraordinary. You know, it answers the question that has plagued advisors and investors alike, you know, for as long as they've been investors. It answers that question. You know, the question to the statement that gets made, you know, you need to diversify your portfolio. You need to invest in alternate streams of return that are uncorrelated to your core equity and bonds. And, you know, often I think advisors, investors alike are left scratching their heads wondering, okay, where then, how, what? And you know, prior to 2019, many of these strategies were not available to retail. They were strictly in the realm of ultra high net worth or institutional. And now that they've come into the fore and become available to investors, I mean, the opportunities are boundless in terms of what investors can do to fortify or to strengthen or you know, make their portfolios more resilient and more deliberate in the approach to how they go about making their portfolios more resilient. Thanks very much for explaining. I think carry is a subject that bears explaining. It's worth tuning in and finding out more about it. It's one of those sort of esoteric areas that I suspect a lot of advisors and investors have never even dreamt of deliberately investing in. Where can people find more information on what we've talked about today and on return stacking and on return stacked ETFs?
Yeah, so the primary educational portal for return stacking is returnstacked.com. That's stacked.com.
Right.
There's also returnstackedetfs.com. And there's plenty of research on managed futures, diversification, and carry itself, including a white paper and a long detailed blog post on investresolve.com on our blog. So there's lots of videos on Resolve's YouTube channel, on the Return Stack YouTube channel. So, you know, we're doing our best to try to cover the waterfront in terms of educational material for carry. And if anyone has any questions or follow-up, then we would welcome direct questions to me at adam.butler@investresolve.com.
Awesome. Adam, thank you very much. Thank you for explaining that. And all that information is below in the show notes. And Adam, thank you very much for your time today. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thanks so much. Great questions, Pierre, as usual.